Oh, you the voice?
Nah, not me.
So if you're not the voice, who is?
The people, man. The people's the voice.
So what does that make you?
That makes me the middleman. I'm the middleman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Middleman Podcast. I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, and today I am joined by local artist Jay Lotus.
What's good, everybody? How we feeling?
Welcome, man. Welcome to your first or maybe second podcast.
Yeah.
You know, where you and I were just discussing something off the camera, but, you know, it's a pleasure having you here. You know, you reached out a while back, and at the time, I was like, I respect it. I respect the grind. I respect your page. I respect everything about you. But it's not the right time just yet. And it was just a matter of, like, we had to get other people through the door. So here we are, double backed around. You know, I definitely heard your new project. And it's a really, really good project. And I'm excited for this conversation, man. I'm excited to meet you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. And I'm glad you're giving me honest feedback on the project too. That really resonates, man.
I will, man. I will. So, like, you know, the common question is Jay Lotus, right? Where does that name come from? And if you look on his Instagram, you will find the answer to Jay Lotus, you know, as to what it means. So the acronym for Lotus, could you please explain that? That's an excellent acronym there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Lotus means living outside the universal standard, which is my mentality on life in general. That's just my approach every day when I wake up in the morning. And it's definitely the roots of where my music are. And what I mean by living outside the universal standard is not adhering to any what you're supposed to do or any standards, any stigma, anything that society placed upon you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or that you felt you needed to do growing up. So it's thinking outside of the box and living outside of the box every day with an open mind.
So did you have the Lotus tag to you before you even became a true artist?
No. So when I started making music, I was also coinciding with my music journey was a spiritual journey. And within that, I'm sure, as you've heard, Lotus is in a lot of different spiritual cultures, mm-hmm. and it's revered. So what a lotus flower is and why it's a marker in spiritual culture is because it grows in filthy conditions into a beautiful flower. So it represents growing in adversity, which I don't think that's just something that happens to some people. I think that's what life can be. I think that's what the purpose of life is that you grow up, and whether you like it or not, you're going to face adversity and struggle at some point. Mm. And once you overcome that adversity and struggle is when you truly find the meaning to what your life is and who you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. I honestly didn't know that a lotus flower grows in a filthy, you know, place from the dirt, you know, mm-hmm. So to speak. So yeah, that's fantastic. Jay Lotus, you know, and as I was reading that post, you explain who you are as a creator. You explain, you know, how music made you feel, all the contents, all the genres that you touch upon, you know, that, really don't kind of fit your genre as to the music that you're making, but you are inspired by numerous, accounts of music. You know, I saw jazz recently, you know, you posted on your story. You were like, jazz is like probably, or was it blues? Was it blues?
It was jazz? Blues. Yeah. But jazz was in there. Yeah. Anything that speaks to me, man. But yeah, the post you're referring to, it was a picture and there was a goat like in the clouds. And then there was a bunch of other people walking around looking up at it. And the people were labeled as all different music genres, and blues was the father of them all type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, because mm-hmm. blues didn't necessarily come first, but blues influenced first. And like today, any track you hear today on the Billboard top has some influence of blues music for sure.
So you were in touch with blues, you were in touch with all these other genres, like even like heavy metal, heavy rock, yeah. you know, stuff like that. And that to me is what like was very intriguing because, you know, as I was reading the post, there was I mentioned you off the camera that there was something that you mentioned that maybe you should try or you did try. And it was like a whole different experience. And it was in tribute to Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Okay. Which was just like take a step back and listen to Jimi Hendrix. I'm sure everyone's heard Jimi Hendrix, right? But I've only heard Jimi Hendrix in like a sober atmosphere is what I mean. You know what I mean? Like at work, you know, it's not something I would go out for all the time and listen to, but I knew he was filthy. I knew he's one of the goats, right?
Yeah. He has a legend status to him. There's a whole stigma behind him, but a lot of people haven't dove in and found out like what even happened there.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. What did you say? You said there was a legend factor to him?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so the story of Hendrix was he was in the army and he got out of the army. He lived in Seattle, and Seattle was like becoming the heart of rock and roll. Mm. And then he went to where rock and roll was really popping in the UK. Right. And so the legendary night is that he went on stage with Eric Clapton to jam. He asked Eric Clapton and his band if he could jam. And there were a few members of the Beatles in the audience.
That's sick.
Yeah. And Hendrix stole the show. Eric Clapton was not happy with them. They did not really have a great relationship after that. But everybody else, including the Beatles, were completely blown away. And allegedly from that night forward was when the legend of Hendrix began. Because like in the UK, some black kid with an afro playing the guitar upside down with his left hand, ripping it, just came on stage at Eric Clapton, at the height of Eric Clapton, and just stole the show.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, so like with that, man, it definitely sounds like you have such an educated background on music, man. And that's great for you to have.
So I wouldn't say completely educated, but my interest can take me far. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Such as Wu-Tang.
Yeah, such as Wu-Tang.
So yeah, man, I really enjoy it. And you said in that post, it was like, yeah, I had some ganja and I listened to Jimi Hendrix and it was a different experience. And I was like, all right, let me try that out. So I tried that this morning. I talked to Mary and I was listening to Jimi Hendrix and I was like, oh yeah. I was like, this is sick. Cause then I was looking at your artist profile on Spotify and I'm like, oh, there's a playlist. And I was like, that's dope. It's an infinite playlist.
Yeah.
And it gave me a taste of who you listen to and a lot of J. Cole there. I saw a lot of J. Cole.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of Jimmy and bro, like it was like a catalog. Like I didn't even get to the bottom of the playlist.
I believe like 3,500 songs.
Gee, man. I think mine's at 800.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm going for 10K. That's my goal. 10K.
And then onto a different playlist, right? Onto a different playlist. Uh-huh. So welcome to the Middleman Podcast, my friend. Let's talk about your music. Let's talk about some of your first songs. So the first one was Katana. It was a freestyle that is released on Spotify. I'm sure there were songs before that, correct?
Well, there were freestyles before that. There
okay.
Katana was actually the first time that, so it's a freestyle because when I was in the booth, there was no notes or no nothing. I didn't memorize the whole thing, but I did take a pen to paper for that song. So that was the first time I took a pen to paper. So, I kept the freestyle vibe because all of those bars, every piece of that song had come to me in freestyles, and it's everything I combined into one that I had at the time. You know what I mean?
I like that. Yeah. Because we all as freestylers or even, you know, you've done it for so long that you've got these lines that you've said and you were like, nah, that's fire. You know,
yeah,
so
exactly.
And it's in the bag. It's in the arsenal.
Yeah.
And, no, I respect that. I understand that. So it's really cool that all of that collage together. And you released that when?
I released that October 21st of last year. So we're almost coming up on a year.
Congratulations. And did you make that beat yourself?
No, actually, that beat and the beat for False Prophet on my project were made by another producer. His name is Dead Audio. Shout out to Dead Audios. And you could check his stuff out on SoundCloud. He just actually released something. I think he put a project together and he's dropping another single. But I met him I was working at Amazon.
Okay.
And I met him there. We got together before I really was serious about it. And he was like, I'm a real producer, man. I can help you out and get you some beats. And he gave me two of those beats. And I wrote to them. And then eventually when I got my own computer and taught myself how to engineer, I was able to mix and master them. And so a lot of the stuff in those songs I did add. So I had a piece in the production.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Katana, you hear helicopters and traffic in the street and stuff like that and thunder and lightning. All that stuff I added because I was just getting into what production could be. You know what I mean? So I had a piece in producing those songs, but the tracks themselves were fully created by somebody else for those two specific.
So let's take a step back here real quick. Okay. So you were talking about how, you know, you approached, what was the producer's name again?
Dead Audios.
Dead Audios. So you, Dead Audios, like see you later.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. So Dead Audios, you approached Dead Audios and you were like, hey man, like, I think I could do this. And, I want to, you know, if you could provide me some beats, that's great. And the reason I bring that up is because on your Instagram, I was checking that out. There's a really cool reel there that, it's a text message. And I'm sure you know which one I'm talking about here.
Yeah, I do know what you're
talking about. It's a text message and it goes, it's you speaking to someone saying, yo, bro, I think I could really do this music shit, right?
Yeah.
And your buddy replied in, what did he say exactly?
He was like, definitely, bro. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that right there, right? That sense of just like wanted to go and get it. What was that turning point for you? And, you know, why did you reach out to that person specifically?
Well, so that person you're speaking about is Mike Slavinsky. That's my day one best friend, my brother since middle school. Like, he was the first homie I met in middle school, and we all know how scary it was your first day of sixth grade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he was the first dude that I didn't go to elementary school with that I made friends with, and that friendship lasted and stuck to this day. So he was, we had actually fell off for a little bit just because in high school we drifted. I was playing basketball, he was playing football. So things drifted for a minute and we reconnected. And once we reconnected, it was, we were both at pretty low points in our lives, and then we were there for each other. So it was a good, I don't know, it was meant to be. Stars aligned, you know what I mean, when we reconnected, and we definitely helped each other get through a tough time. And so he was part of when I decided to just, like you said, gun for it and go for the music thing. There was, I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I wanted to rap, produce, sing, play guitar, because I played a little guitar at the time. And like you're saying, I'm open to all genres of music. So it was limitless ideas going on in my brain. And he was the one guy that was around and kept me centered. And he was like, dude, you can rap. Do this rap shit. Like, fuck the guitar for now. Do this rap shit. So after talking to him about that, is actually where you see the next videos in those clips. That's like almost a timeline of the videos where we're just hanging out, or he took a lot of the videos recording of me with a microphone or at rehearsal. So he was a part of that journey, and that post was definitely me reflecting back on my career, but also a shout out to him for being there the whole time.
It's really fun to see that. I'm sure, you know, you just looking back at it like years later now, right? So like, let's jump forward 5 years, right? You're going to see those clips. And what I find funny is it looks like, you know, you were having listening parties with friends.
Yeah.
You know, like just putting them on for the first time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could see the excitement within the group, you know, within, your close circle, you know, that's supporting you and elevating you and believing in you. So that's a lot of fun to be able to just look back at and reminisce on stuff that you've already completed with the people who you were around. You know, it's such a great time.
Yeah. And shout out to all those people, my family and friends that are around me, because it is a tight knit circle, and their support, I wouldn't be where I am. I wouldn't be anywhere. You know what I mean? They're the ones that reflect what I put out. And like, I listening to my own music, I'm my worst critic. You know what I mean? So when I put it out to them and they tell me like, yeah, maybe it's not perfect, but this is what you got right now and the world should see it. Mm-hmm. And having those type of people around me pushes me. Like, I was to go perform specifically, I wouldn't have got on stage if it weren't for so many different people that just pushed me and pushed me and pushed me. Because we were actually talking about this before we got on the podcast. I used to play basketball. My biggest regret and fear with basketball is that I couldn't perform in front of a crowd. It shook me up. I totally froze. I get the ball and freeze. I didn't know where to go.
Anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And I struggled with a lot of mental health stuff, especially during high school. And music was kind of always there for me. So when I was able to start creating music and then had people around me to push me to take it to new levels, I ran into the same battle again. And once I ran into that battle, I had a whole new mindset, a whole new realm of experience, and my passion for music is much deeper than my passion for basketball was. So I got to go face that again, and thanks to those people being there for me, and a lot of those people that are there for me now were there when I was struggling playing basketball. So it was like, okay, I haven't changed that much. Like, yeah, I'm a new man, but like, it felt the same. It felt like I conquered that beast. You know what I mean?
So with that being said, you know, you've done a few performances out here, and are there any, what do you find yourself doing to calm yourself down before a show?
Listening to music, honestly. Yeah. Popping the headphones in. I've been messing around recently. My favorite thing to do, though, that helps me the most is definitely just being social. Like, if I'm, because I usually attend open mics, and if not, the shows I go to are at the same stage that it's the Keystone stage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going there tonight. If you're looking forward to seeing some music, there's 7 p.m. I think doors open at 6 at the Keystone stage. They're having a music only open mic.
Sick.
Yeah. They just started it once a month on Sundays. But, anyway, so my favorite thing to do is definitely to talk to all the other performers and people and just be a part of the show and be a part of the crowd. Cause being a fan and connecting makes me like, drop the whole anxiety and drop my nervousness, because I realized that I kind of owe the people my music because I, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So like, I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, think about our comedians, comedy clubs.
Yeah.
You know, they'll all bullshit against each other, you know, and have a good time. And in a sense, that's probably what you're finding yourself doing now.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like, there's a sense of competition, but it's all to better yourself. You know what I mean? And to better each other. So just being a part of community and being a part of something bigger is definitely what's helped me get past that hurdle of anxiety the most.
That's great because it's also going to open a lot of opportunities for you to collab, you know, and that self-awareness of yourself, you know, so you are, what's the word I'm looking for? You are secure of yourself because you're not afraid to talk. Well, you're not afraid to talk to people, learn with people, learn from people, you know, and collab. You know, some people, I've talked about it before, like they don't want to give their advice or their jewels or gems, you know, and steer you in the wrong path. And that's just because they're insecure of themselves.
100%.
You know,
that's definitely, I agree with that assessment and I appreciate it. I take pride in the fact that I am secure in myself because I used to be very insecure in myself. You know what I mean? And it was a long journey to get to being confident in who I am and what I stand to do. And like you're saying, it opened up a ton of opportunities for me. Actually, I got a song coming out this Friday with my boy Decipher. I met him at the Keystone stage, and that was just an opportunity that arose itself because I opened up and got past the fear. And I never would have met him if I didn't go on stage. You know what I mean?
And then you guys chopped it up, and then there was an equal respect between each other, as you said earlier, of being a fan of each other. Because obviously, there had to be some type of, I like that tempo. I like how he does his work. It's funny the song is named Tempo.
Yeah.
You know, the way that person works, and I think that we would be good on a collab together. So for you guys to do that, that's extravagant. And let's talk about one of your first collabs that I ran upon, which is Beautiful Soul. Okay, a song titled Beautiful Soul featuring Corvus the Universal Prince. First of all, what a dope name.
Kavaris. Kavaris.
Oh, Kavaris. Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
You don't see that name every day, man.
So no, I don't.
Definitely an interesting name. He's a blessing. He's like my guardian angel. So he worked with my mother. They had the same, they met at work and she was like, my son does music. Da, da, da. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And so he actually, out of the kindness of his heart, came to the house and sat down. I was with a couple other people at the time trying to put together like a group that didn't really work out. But he came and he was like, I'll lead you guys and I'll mentor and I'll show you everything I know. He was in school for music at the time. He still is in school for music, actually, I believe. And he's an established artist and he's been and said everywhere. You know what I mean? His name's known in a lot of different places. And not that means as much, but he's definitely experienced. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And his genre is completely opposite from mine. He makes pop music and he's a singer. So for me, normally you would think as a hip hop artist, like, what am I going to learn from you? But
okay,
for me, it was like, we're only going to speak in the fundamentals of music and I'm not going to worry about outdoing you at all. I'm not going to compare myself. You're not going to compare yourself because we're not trying to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I learned a ton from him. Like everything, pretty much everything I know to this day about the music business and about music production and engineering, I learned from him and I could definitely credit to him.
Good. Are you still going?
I was going to get to the song. Huh?
Yeah, I wanted to, right before we get into the song, with that being said, you know, you mentioned that he's pop and you're rap, right? I think about JID and Imagine Dragons, you know, doing that song, right? And the story behind that is apparently Mac Miller influenced JID to go do that song with Imagine Dragons. It's going to be one of your hits. And it really turned out to be, I think, JID's most like played song, you know.
Surpassed a billion streams. His number one song. I didn't know that Mac Miller influenced that. That's actually really interesting, man.
I follow this page called Rap TV and all these rap things. Like, I'm always
gonna have to get on that.
Yeah,
to get on Rap TV.
Twitter's great, or X, I guess. I don't know what the fuck that
shit
is.
Yeah, what the fuck is going on in the world right now?
Weird. Why X, bro? Is it?
Can it be like a word? You know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly. I don't even know what that means.
I mean, look what he named his kid, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I know. That man is a strange man, but they're gonna fight. You know, him and Mark Zuckerberg. Apparently,
I think Mark Zuckerberg pussy out, bro.
No?
Isn't that, yeah, I saw it the other day. He said, we're going to call off the fight. And I was like, nah, come on. Y'all both are training. Like,
damn, man. All right, who are you taking in that fight? Honestly, I'm taking Mark.
I'm taking Elon.
You taking Elon?
Do you know who Lex Fridman is?
Lex Fridman. I heard the name, yeah.
So Lex Fridman, he does a podcast, and he works with AI. And he's like a super genius, man. But he also does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I believe he's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And him and Elon are buddies.
okay, yeah.
And I know Mark Zuckerberg's training with people or whoever too. And Elon also, like, his boys with Joe Rogan. Like, he's in the MMA community. You know what I mean? I don't know. I got Elon all day.
If it comes to fruition, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. So, yeah, that was in JID, Imagine Dragons, Mac Miller. You know, that's how that happened. Beautiful Soul. Yeah, it is a pop song. It is a pop song. It's a slower song. Describe that song. Describe how that all happened.
Funny story, actually. So, I did not expect that. I've been asking him for a feature since I met him, and like jokingly, wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Seeing like what I could do. I was like, can you rap? Like, I'd be bullshitting with him all the time. So, one day he hits me up, and I'm at work, and I serve tables at Red Lobster, and I bartend. So I have time to spare at work. I can check my phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes I like to write lyrics at work. So he hits me up and he was like, I got a song. Do you want to feature on it? And I was like, yeah, immediately. So he sends me the beat and it's a slow day at work. So I sit down and I write an 8-bar verse and then I go home, record it and send it back to him. And he thought it was going to take me like a week. You know what I mean? To really like sit down and think of it. But it came supernaturally. The verse I wrote, I've been looking to do something different and to get out of the fast, repetitive hip hop genre and to slow down and maybe switch to a different genre. So it was perfect. And I had something, I had like a couple bars already set aside that fit perfectly. And then I just added a couple, recorded it, sent it back to him the same day. And he was like, he was impressed, but he only wanted to give me the 8 bars. So I fought for more, fought my ass off for more. And he agreed and he gave me more of the song. And when we put that out, he got a performance invite for Pride Fest in Wilkes-Barre.
Yes.
So he asked them if he could bring me along and they agreed. So I went there. That was actually my first show that wasn't an open mic.
Wow, what a big show.
Yeah, it definitely was. I had no idea what was going on. I was just happy to be there. And we had a news interview after. The people were so polite and open to hearing everything. They were just, everybody was there to have fun and support. You know what I mean? So I would do a Pride show any year. You know what I mean? That was a great, especially for my first time performing and being nervous on stage. They're very, very welcoming. And the opportunity to have was great. So that song opened the doors for me to do everything else I'm doing today.
That looked like a great performance. It looked like a great time. You know, Wilkes-Barre is such a big event. And, you know, kudos to the Universal Prince is what I'm just going to call them.
Yeah.
kudos to the Universal Prince for giving you that chance and allowing you to do that feature. And, you know, you said you fought for more bars and you did. You know, I heard a second verse in there. So like, yeah, no, that's fantastic. That's a great story. And for that to be your first show, man, that's absolutely insane. I had to get over anxiety, but at least you had someone on the stage with you who, you know, is sharing that moment with you, you know? So
yeah,
it wasn't, you're up there all alone, you know?
No. So. Yeah. And that would have definitely been much more nerve wracking and like, who knows how it would have went from there. So being able to go up there with him supporting and like, I didn't have to do a whole song by myself. You know what I mean? I got to start the song off, then he came in and then I got to do a verse later. Mm-hmm. So it also taught me how to conduct myself while doing a feature. You know what I mean? Cause that plays in the back of your head. Like, oh shit, I'm on stage. What do I do when I'm not rapping? You know what I'm saying?
What did you find yourself doing?
Awkwardly dancing as every other rapper does. And then you start bopping, then you start getting into it. But,
that's funny.
Yeah, that's how it is. But, so that definitely, that combined with doing the Keystone open mics and the NEPA scene open mics at the V Spot, shout out to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely helped me to get the fundamentals down and to learn how to read a crowd, which was really the big battle because my music is palatable for everybody. I do make a variety of music. So some of my songs are more for the public than not. But reading the, like, you want to know what your set list is going to be, and you might have to change it last second just to, like, not that I'm, all right, so nobody's going to shut me up. You know what I mean? I want to make that clear type shit. I stand on my message. But if I look in the crowd and there's a bunch of kids or whatever, it's like, I could change up, you know what I mean? I could change up what I'm doing just to continue the energy and have a good night. I feel like it's respectful to the establishment you're at and respectful to the crowd. And that's also how you get where you want to be. It's like, you don't want to go there and I don't know, if I go to a country place, I'm not going to go do my hardest rap song. They're not going to ask for me to come back. You know what I mean?
No, I hear you. You definitely have to read the crowd, read the room. We talked about that with Joey Too Cozy Poetry. He's a poet out here. You may have seen him at the NEPA scene. You may have seen him with the Party Poets there on Thursdays. But yeah, he talked about reading the crowd and finding what type of poem would be fitting for who's in the crowd, you know? So sometimes you have to adjust on the fly, man, and that's what you got to do. So, you know, the Prince, the Universal Prince, you know, that definitely helped you out with production, learning fundamentals of music. And you got yourself a pretty cool little setup at home. It's a pretty cool setup with the, with the studio. A lot of wall art, man, a lot of wall art, which is great. Cool. You got to do what you got to do, man. You got to fit the character. As I think, as Broey commented, the studio or the wall art makes a studio. I think everyone knows that.
100%. You got to get the wall art before the computer, man.
Exactly, man. So I was just looking at that pan, you know, wide variety of music, you know, Led Zeppelin, Tyler, the Creator. Who else were you talking about up there? Jimi Hendrix, you know, and it all just started like that. And you started producing your own beats. You know, you started producing your own beats, making more music, finding yourself becoming a producer and an artist at the same time, which is great because I think those types of artists, when you don't have to rely on, you know, someone else to make a beat for you, you can do it yourself if you need to. Not saying that that's necessarily the way to success. You can always have those collabs like Audio Sound. Right?
Dead Audios?
Dead Audios,
yeah,
fuck.
Dead Audio.
Sorry, no sorry. But yeah, man, so you created that and you started that studio and, you know, here you are, you released your first project, what, about a month ago?
Yeah, about a month ago now. And it was definitely a road to get there. And I try to compare myself to what I listen to. That's my, I use a lot of reference tracks. Okay. So if I'm just listening to music in the headphones and I'm like, ooh, this mixes, you know what I mean? I can kind of like, I develop my ear to where I can tell almost a little bit of what they're doing production wise. So, but that makes my mixes not sound great, you know what I mean? In comparison. So I've been trying to match that up and that's where I'm trying to get as a producer. And with the Shadow EP, that was kind of at the time up to date with my skill set of mixing and mastering. Not as much with track producing. My tracks have gotten a lot different since then, but I was able to get them to good quality to where you can play them pretty much on any system and everything will come through clean. But and that was a journey, man. That's not as easy. Easier said than done.
I mean, creating any type of project, you know, whatever your creative project process might be, you know, I spoke to Broey and Broey said he locks himself in a room for hours until it's done. And I'm like, you're man. Nuts.
He's
like,
a madman. He's a genius though, man. His process is definitely, I learned a lot from him as well. Mm-hmm. He's precise. You know what I mean? And
super
real sound guy, you know what I mean? Yeah. Real sound guy. So I learned a lot from him about dynamics and balance and things like that, which I you would have never, especially in the hip hop community, like I would have never thought to like check on, you know what I mean? Didn't even think it was an issue. So shout out Broey for that, for sure.
Shout out Broey, he's a man, real sound guy, we all know him. So Shadow EP, let's talk about the Shadow EP. Why'd you name it Shadow? That's a pretty interesting term.
Well, have you ever heard of Shadow Integration?
No.
Okay, so shadow integration is an idea that all of the negative pieces of yourself can be put into a positive light in a certain circumstance, right? So take what's a good example? So take a fight, for example, right? A fight could be obviously a very negative thing. If you're walking down the street and you go and punch some guy in the face, not a good idea, not a good outcome for anybody. Mm-hmm. You look like an asshole. If that guy got punched in the face, somebody could get arrested. All negatives. But if some dude is doing some fuck shit to your girlfriend and you go and you punch him in the face, good job. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, okay.
That's the simplest example I could give you of shadow integration. It's like, okay, I have an urge to punch somebody. You know what I mean? But I'm going to use it for the right reason. Or like if there's a guy that has a lot of anger and a lot of energy, he goes to the gym every day and then he comes out calm and collected, or he takes boxing classes or whatever. So I was at a point in my life where I had a lot of negative pieces of me, and my negative pieces weren't as direct like that. They were more like we were talking about earlier, mental health and anxiety. And I was learning how to integrate it, and I did it through music. So that was my shadow integration, was taking all my mental health issues and all the issues and trauma I had from my past and integrating them into sound.
I think that's a brilliant meaning, man. I'm happy you taught me that terminology, shadow integration.
Yeah,
that is dope, bro. That's a really good meaning. And yeah, music for everyone. You know, for a majority of people you speak to, it helps with anxiety, or excuse me, just like putting out things that maybe were difficult to say at a point and just getting it out there. You know, it's a form of expression.
It's a form of expression.
So here we go. The album, or excuse me, EP, False Prophet is where we start off. That's the intro. Okay. Mm-hmm. False Prophet intro. And, you know, I felt that song, it was a good intro song. It was upbeat, and it was like, yo, I'm here type of deal that I felt up on that song.
Exactly what I was going for.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Exactly what I was going for. So that song right there, I was just a big fan of that. And then the second song after that, we have Katana, which you brought back.
Yeah.
You brought back.
Yeah. I wasn't going to. I was going to put something else there, but I developed a love for that song over time, and I felt it fit the vibe of the rest of the songs on the EP, so I threw it on there. And so False Prophet, is the name of that is just an homage to J. Cole, False Prophets. So, and I mentioned profiting and not worshiping money throughout the song. So that was kind of the idea there, is that there's a good type of profit and a bad type of profit, or that could be a bad type of profit. And like, what really is it? It was kind of questioning that whole meaning. And with Katana, that whole song is, my pen is my sword. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Type of thing. And I'm sure you've heard that idea. You're a Wu-Tang fan, Liquid Swords. So that, we got into that one earlier. That one's all what I had at the time, and how, like you mentioned earlier, you said the word arsenal. It was what was in my arsenal that I could all put into one blade as a weapon.
Did you remaster that song when you put it on the EP, or did you just, okay.
I did. Yeah. I had a lot of ad libs in there that were pretty robotic that I didn't like. So I cut a lot of things out. If you listen to them side by side, you might be able to pick up some of the differences.
Okay. I might have to. That'd be really, really cool. And I'm happy you did that, because, you know, it shows the growth and the progression. Like, okay, you know, I don't like it. Let's get rid of it and do something else with it. So that's good on your part.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cash Rules.
One of my personal favorites.
You know, obviously a Wu-Tang reference here. And that beat, let me ask you, man, did you make that yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the first beats I ever made, actually.
That one is, it's talented, bro. It's sick. I love it. You know, what I have here is, definitely Wu-Tang and, the DJ break that you put in the middle there.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, in the beginning.
Uh huh.
Right in the beginning to break down the beat. That shit was tough. I was like, all right. Nah, he means business.
Okay? Thank you, brother.
And another thing with the Wu-Tang reference for that song, you know, obviously the Cash Rules, Cream, you know, we know that. But there was, in my opinion, I felt with the piano, you know, if you watched the Wu-Tang Saga, you saw that that second album that they released, the RZA wanted to introduce live instruments.
Yeah.
You know, rather than, you know, a sample drop in, you know, or he wanted an actual string violinist in the song. You know, that's what he did.
In the TV show, he brought a whole orchestra in his living room.
Exactly, bro. And they're like, oh, you crazy for this.
Yeah.
So with that, I could see the inspiration from the Wu with the piano, because I felt like it was, you were trying to bring that live instrument, to that song and that element.
Yeah. And that, so I didn't play that piano part. That piano part is a loop that I pitched down and chopped up, but, I definitely was trying to bring the live instrument feel. That was what I was trying to do. And there's a needle drop at the end there. Like when the piano cuts off, that's a needle drop. That's, has a lot of effects on it, that end piece there. So, yeah, when I was watching the Wu-Tang show, Wu-Tang and American Saga on Hulu.
Fantastic show.
Beautiful show. Yeah. And that third season, that third season is crazy. But that's what inspired me to produce, because watching the first season of that and seeing the RZA just literally in his mom's basement with a studio set up and just having the boys come through, I was like, bro, what am I doing with my life? Like, that is what I need to be doing. You know what I mean? So after I felt like that was all I was into at the time. I was only really listening to Wu-Tang and Mobb Deep and even like 90s Jay-Z and Nas and like
Nas is real. Filthy.
Oh my God, yeah. And he's still going.
He's on a tear right now.
Put some crazy shit out, bro. Crazy. But so yeah, I was definitely trying to integrate what I was being inspired by at the time. You know what I mean? Because I was like, I don't really want to go make a bunch of trap beats with 808s and stuff when I'm being inspired by all this old school boom bap. You know what I mean? Like
the boom bap. Yeah, great way to put it.
Yeah, gritty and grimy. Like just like the Wu-Tang say all the time. So that's definitely, that song in particular represents the whole feel of what was going on in my head at the time.
And that's one of your favorites on the EP?
Yeah, definitely.
Probably top one? Mm. Or is the next one maybe your top one?
Nah, the next one's not my top one. It's lot of people's. The last one's my top one.
Okay, so with that song, Cash Rules, right? There was something in there that I was, because I like to listen to music. I love beats, you know, and I was, you know, listening to it with my headphones on earlier. And I kept hearing a shoo.
Oh, okay.
Did you do that? Did you like, yeah, did you? Yeah.
No, that was actually, that's a, so, you know, you ever, you know what a riser is? You ever hear in a song where the beat's about to drop and you hear, and then it drops? That's a reversed riser.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So I took a riser and flipped it around and sounded like, shh.
Yeah. No, I like that, bro. I was listening to it. I'm like, yo, wait, do I hear that? Do I hear that right? Shh.
And if I use it in another song, so I don't know if I did this in Cash Rules, but in another song, it swoops from here to over here because I had, you know, upgraded my engineering skills a bit. And I know how to pan live, so I would make it go. And same with the DJ breaks. If I use a DJ break now, it'll go and go like in the headphones, it goes all the way across, which is definitely dope, man.
I love when artists do that. I love when people do that because that's like Jimi Hendrix earlier. Okay, like what was I listening to? I think I was listening to, it was either Purple Haze or something about depression.
Manic Depression.
Yes, Manic Depression. Yeah, Manic Depression. He had his guitar riff just in your left headphone, you know, as the background music was going on, and you could just hear it. And feel, and I love when artists do that because I think that's really, really cool. Especially it activates the brain. You know, it's weird, but it activates
the brain. It's stimulating. And the reason for Hendrix, actually, and if you listen to the Beatles music, a lot of their stuff is in mono. Do you know the difference? You've heard the difference between mono and stereo? A lot of their stuff is only recorded in mono. So when they panned, they could only hard pan left and right. There was no stereo effects and like having it all over the headphones. So, like, when you listen to a lot of old rock and roll on your headphones, the guitar will be right here, and it's a stage effect. You know what I mean? They set it up so it was like a guitarist was standing right here, and the bass player was standing. You know what I mean? And that's how, or even in, like, if you listen to ELO, you know, the song Mr. Blue Sky?
I don't know Mr. Blue Sky. No, I don't. I've never heard that one.
That might be one that it's, like, if you heard it, you'd be like, oh, okay, I know the shit. But they use a lot of live orchestra. So all having those in mono, they'd have to set it up. They literally have to like put a chart of how the violinist and violas and everything would be and then place all the instruments there, which is mind boggling, man. That shit's wild, dude.
Modernized music makes it a little bit easier to do that. Makes it a little bit easier to do. I didn't know about the Beatles, but you're definitely right. I mean, that's how they had to do it back in the day. So that's really cool for them to do that. So, you know, that's Cash Rules. I really enjoy that song. It's a classic song. I can see the Wu-Tang reference. I can see all of it. And it's brilliant. Quick little shout out to Nezo, our engineer. He just released his album.
Hell
yeah. Yeah, so and in that song, there's a Troy Blue has a feature, and I think it's called, the song was My Bones. And he said, dream, drugs rule everything around me. So, you know, definitely.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That is introspective right there, man. Hell yeah.
So shout out Troy Blue. Shout out Nezo. You know, he's out there doing his thing. Make sure you check out his music and his new album. So the next song is Yo No Habla. Okay. And that one more than likely probably is the crowd favorite, right?
For sure. That's the one that gets everybody out their feet. Like out their seat and on their feet for sure. That song, that was the easiest song to make on the project, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, I made that beat in like 10 minutes, man. Yeah, that was pretty easy. I was messing around. I was listening to some some Latin music, and I was, I don't know, those beat, the, you know what I'm talking about. I was,
it's like a two-stepper.
Yeah, I was messing around with that on my MIDI board, and I was like, I was playing with it all night, dude, and I was like, dude, I have to do something with this. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to rap on it, but I at least have to make a track with it. So I had a piano riff that was almost like the one from Cash Rules. It was in like a hip, it had like hip hop swing on it. And then I switched it and made it faster to match the drums I was using. And it turned into the piano and Yono Habla. Once I heard that, I was like, oh shit, I got one, man. So then I added, I would just copy and paste and add, like move my melodies down to keep them in the same, you know, key and everything. So it didn't sound crazy, and switch out my instruments. So then I put a bass in there and a saxophone. And then I was like, oh, I have a full beat going right now.
Yes, sir.
And then, I just freestyled on it, man. I went, like, I recorded and I just started talking about whatever I was feeling at the time, went back, wrote everything down that I liked, scrapped everything I didn't, filled in new shit, recorded it again. And I was like, damn, that was, like, that was quick, man. It was the quickest one I ever did that I like, in a day, pretty much just went in and made a song. You know what I mean? Still, I haven't done that since that song. Like, it takes me a long time to get projects done sometimes, I'm sure.
Where do you feel like you grasp most of your inspiration for when you're writing or even when you're freestyling?
Mary Jane, man. Okay. Nah, jokes aside, though, definitely. I'm inspired a lot by stand-up comedy as of recently, actually.
Brilliant. Okay, that's interesting.
They dance around ideas like nobody else, and they can hold a crowd like nobody else. Because once a stand-up comic has the crowd, there's no turning back, pretty much. You got to say some wild, out-of-pocket shit, you know what I mean? But especially seeing like local comedians do their thing, it's really interesting to see, like, I don't know, I go up there with music and there's a lot of support behind me. You know what I mean? My friends are in the crowd. Like, I'm not looking for a laugh, which is a direct marker of a reaction. I'm looking for, you know what I mean?
That's
which,
what you're looking for.
Shit, anybody could do that, bro. Like, if you didn't, if you don't like it, you could bop your head to support me. You know what I mean? So just, I feel like it's easier, like on the professional level, to see comedians that just go up and they just got what's in their head, bro, and a microphone, and they just got to memorize their set, go up there and talk their shit, and they'll have an entire audience of people rolling fucking laughing. Is like, and the ideas they talk about, like, you're a stand-up comic, right?
I've done it before, yes.
Yeah, so are you familiar with George Carlin?
George Carlin? I haven't heard of George Carlin, no.
Oh, man.
I'm big on comedy. That's the one name I haven't heard.
Check out George Carlin, man. Definitely check out George Carlin.
Have you heard of him, Mike? George Carlin, he's usually pretty tapped in.
I think he's like old school, right?
Old school, old school. He's passed. Rest in peace, George Carlin. He's definitely passed.
Yeah, I know about George. I know a lot about comedians, but I never watched him, but I know he's just old school.
He's very philosophical, and he came up in the age where people were censoring people, and he did a skit, actually, which was all the bad words you can't say on television, and he said every single curse word in the book, every single one, and they kicked him off TV, obviously, you know what I mean? And when he grew old, he was a bitter, angry old man, but he was so fucking smart and so fucking funny that he would go on and he would just talk his shit and rip up society at the time. And he has some of the wildest jokes that will make you contemplate everything that's going on in the world. And he's a legend, man. If you guys check his shit out, you'll be like, what the fuck? Like, cause sometimes you want to, you're waiting for the punchline and it's just like, well, he's really like educating us right now. And you think he's done joking. And then the funniest shit you've ever heard just hits, bro. And his punchlines connect, and it'll take a long time to get there, but it's worth the journey.
I think that's really, really unique, man. I the last thing I expected to hear was a comedian. You know what I mean? Or just like, you know, comedians as a group, you know, that they help with inspiration and writing. But I see how it correlates because you put it in context. Take what you have in your head and put it and just say it, you know, and just say it and make it happen. Mm-hmm. So that was really unique, bro. That's intricate. Thanks, and that's brother. Different. That is different.
Yeah,
that
thanks.
Is
different. That's definitely, that's a peek at all the nonsense that's going on up here all the time, man.
Voices in the head, right? Voices in the head. We all have them. So our last track here we have is Vision. Vision. Okay. So Vision, what do I have here? I actually had to listen to Vision twice. Well, I've listened to Benjamin multiple times, but this morning I was listening to it and there was something you said and I was like, nah, did I hear that correctly? And I wasn't going to skip through your song and find that part. I just said, let's restart the whole song and just let's listen to it again. And the one bar that stuck with me that I was like, wow, that's pretty, that's a different line, is trying to be a king, not a goat, not a fucking goat. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to be a king, not a fucking goat, because I feel like most people would rather be a goat than a king. But let me ask you, explain that line to me. Explain that to me.
So the idea behind that is that goat stands for greatest of all time.
Yes.
Right? I'm not trying to be the greatest of all time at what I do. I'm trying to be the king of what I do. And the king, you're Wu-Tang, king of my own cipher. You know what I mean? So for me, I don't mean a king as in I want to rule my land with a bunch of people. You know what I mean? I mean that nobody's going to tell me or my family shit. And whoever is with me, I got, you know what I'm saying? So and even in the music, it's like when I go up on stage, I don't feel like I'm the greatest to ever do it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I feel like at that moment, I'm the king of the stage. You know what I mean? I feel like we talk a lot of shit with celebrities. You know what I mean? Everybody does. It's kind of part of culture. And I even do. I love doing it. Everybody loves who's better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James. You know what I mean? Comparing artists, comparing actors. It's a good piece of our culture and what we got. We're lucky to have all these beautiful, talented people and to be able to, like, a lot of other countries don't have this shit. You know what I mean? So the fact that we have all these 1%, one in a million people that can do their shit is a blessing. But, I don't know. Comparing them's hard, and comparing myself to them is out of question. You know what I mean?
I gotcha. I like that. No, I was just taken back because I was like, okay, no, that's it's humbling. That's what that says. That's what that says right there. It's humbling. It's yeah. Humbling to who you are. And you know, you mentioned that you didn't have a favorite song, but if I had to guess, it's probably gonna be, or excuse me, that I was wrong about your favorite song. If I had to guess, it's gonna be this one, Visions.
Yeah, for sure.
Why is that?
Visions grew with me. So Katana also grew with me, but Visions grew in a different way. So I wrote the hook, the Cultivation of a Vision. I wrote that a long, long time ago. It was one of the first pieces of something that I wrote that I really, really liked and wanted to keep. And it was in another song that I had that didn't get released for complicated reasons. And so I kept it and it grew with me. And it actually had an opposite meaning from the first song. So it kind of was like a lesson in a way, because in the first time I was making a lot of lyrics changed from that. So the first time I made the song, the idea behind it was kind of almost like false prophet, like an I'm here, this is what I do, these are my bars. I could see that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then I turned it and I was like, this is about a vision and about my future with music. You know what I mean? So it has nothing to do with the present and what I'm doing right now or what I'm capable of, and everything to do with where I'm going and what I can be. You know what I mean? So it was, that whole song is about, once you have a vision or a path and you can see forward and you have an idea of who you can be in the future, do not let that go. Like, that's gun for that. You know what I mean? So that whole song is like, go, 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 gun for what you saw. Whatever epiphany you had, whatever, like, and you know, everybody has their doubts, especially after you do some wild shit like me and become a rapper. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't make sense when I think about it in logical terms, but that's what keeps me going, is like, I have an ideal and I have a feeling that I can become something bigger. So I'm just going to go for it as much as I can.
And that feeling, that gut feeling to follow is what you said it. You hit it right on the nail. Just like, it's to do something as crazy as become a rapper, to do something as crazy as become a podcaster. You know what I mean? Yeah. There was a vision. There is a vision. You know, we have an end goal. We have things that we are chasing. We have things that we want out of what we are creating and doing. You know, we have this up here, which is a manifestation 2048. You know, a friend gifted me it. I've talked about it multiple times. But long story short, it's just something. It's a vision. You know, it's a part of a vision. You know, like, we see this, what it is right now in 2023, and that's set for 2048. But, you know, like, let's just keep going. You know, what, everything in between, I still got to fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a vision, and that vision is going to be deterred a lot, and it's going to change a lot. But it's not right, not wrong. It's whatever we think is right, you know? Yeah. So it's a lot of fun to do all this. So that's the Shadow EP. You just mentioned you have a song coming out called Tempo. Can you talk to me about Tempo, the creation of that song? It's going to be out. Actually, it's going to already be out by the time that this podcast is out. It's going to be out for like 2-3 weeks, maybe.
Yeah, go check that shit out. But, so Tempo is my second collaboration. The first one I'm doing without a mentor, you know what I mean? Because the first one, I was a student to him at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was like, it didn't feel as much as I was going out and doing it on my own. And with Decipher, shout out to Decipher and Roseamp. They're amazingly talented. Like, they're lyrical assassins, man. They have, like, almost a Wu-Tang thing going on. If you haven't checked their music, I'll slide you some of their stuff. I think you like it. But, so I got with Decipher, and he wanted to collab. We all were riffing all day in his studio, just
sick
freestyling, showing each other beats. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was a great time, man. And we centered in on one, because everybody else had to go. I was like, I'll stay, because I'm trying to get a file. You know what I'm saying? Like, anytime I go to the studio, I'm not leaving without a file, bro. You know what I mean? So we sat down, we picked a beat. He had one that he really liked that I showed him earlier. And I showed him like probably 15 other beats, bro. And he was like, I like those. Don't get me wrong, but that's the one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, you heard that first. Your heart didn't change on it. We're going to go for that one. So we put that one down. He wanted to start writing lyrics to it. He was like, let's just get this collab done, go right into it. And I was like, word. So we went into it. I was like, I let him set the tone since it was my beat. You know what I mean? I was like, you write a couple lyrics. And then after I get like 4 bars from you, we'll sit, stop, and talk about where the rest of the song is going. So we have a coherent, you know what I'm saying? And so after the first couple bars he wrote were quick. You know what I mean? It was, he's a, like I said, he's an assassin. You know what I mean? So he was going quick and doing his thing.
Method man.
Yeah. So I hit him back and I slowed it down and I was like, all right, since you're going to take that route, I'm not going to like overdo the listener, which is a bunch of speed rap. I'm going to slow it down and I'll take it different. And so I mentioned the word tempo, you know,
that's
what I
smart.
Mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what we decided to name the song. And then the idea behind the song became to take life at your own pace. You know what I mean? And to move at your own tempo, which is a line in the song.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to hear that song, and you're very spiritual, and I'm happy we definitely got into that side, because I know you mentioned in a few of your songs, Third Eye, you know, and people who are in tune with that, they understand and they see where it's coming from, you know, just being in your mind and being intricate, listening to those voices, using some of them to your advantage, discarding some of the other ones, and, you know, here you are, you know, up-and-coming artist doing your thing. Jay Lotus, it's been a pleasure having you here, man. We're going to get off the air here very soon, but before we get off the air, I'd like to give the floor to the guests. Any messages that you want to share, anything you want to promote, this is your time to get it done, and then we'll transition into tea time. So floor is yours.
My advice to anybody that's starting any endeavor, whether it be music, any type of art, you just got a new job, going to school, don't be afraid to suck, because if you're starting something new, it's going to be rough at first. And the best part is, when you get good at it, you get to look back and say, damn, I really sucked at this. Now I'm actually good at it. So that struggle stops a lot of people. And a lot of people that I know personally have ran from things that they may have fell in love with just because they sucked at it at first. So don't be afraid to suck and be open-minded. Take advice from others. That's pretty much all I got, man. All
right, man. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show. Everybody, please make sure you check out his music. His newest EP is out now, live and direct. Tempo is going to be out by the time this podcast is released. You know, follow him on your Spotify, whatever, Instagram. You know, make sure you check out his music and show love and support to local artists. You know, have fun tonight at your show.
Thank you, brother.
And, you know, just keep going, man. Keep going and just like, breaking barriers, you know, breaking that anxiety barrier to get on stage, you know, just keep going and doing what you got to do, because you're right. Eventually, you know, you're going to look back and be like, damn, that shit sucked. Yeah, and, but here we are and it's a lot better now. So with that being said, everyone, please stick around for tea time, not brought to you by, but inspired by Arizona Iced Tea. I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, signing out. Peace.